Blue Gold Sports is rich in tradition and excellence. It's about the athletes, the coaches, the games, and the history. And it all rolls into one place. It's the Rollin' with the Golds podcast, your official UWO Claire Blue Golds podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Rollin' with the Golds podcast, brought to you by Mancino's Grinders and Pizza. We got Nick, week two already, episode two, season three, episode two. How you doing, bud?
Doing good.
Yeah?
Doing good.
Got a win in the column for football right away a week ago today.
We are flying.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering how the rain would affect it and such, but everything sounds like it was
a game result. Obviously, product on the field went in our favor. Very happy for that. I do have to give a special shout-out. BMB. You know, we talk about how great they are.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that 400 band members stayed outside in the pouring rain to the final whistle and then played afterwards the alma mater was fantastic. And I talked a little bit later in the episode about just the emotion. Like, we had guys coming out of the handshake line running faster than they were on the field just to get to that sideline and meet the band and celebrate with them.
That's awesome.
And so Jason did something really cool where we grabbed a ball and we presented the new band director, Kara Metzger, you know, game ball for her first win.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, outside of, you know, individual stats and stuff like that on the field, band was the MVP that day.
That's awesome.
Still going through some new things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We got to remember that we can't be playing when the visiting team's in formation. So got yelled at a little bit for that, but shout out to them. I mean, we talk about it, you know, every single week. Like, they truly make a difference, right? And coaches in this conference know they hate coming to Eau Claire because they know they're going to have that band behind them for all four quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Teams that don't necessarily know when they come in are, like, shocked at how loud they can get and what a difference they can make. So shout out the band. That was fantastic. Thursday in itself, I mean, but not only the band, like, that the stadium stayed decently full.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will knock on the students a little bit for not being prepared for the rain, and most of them left because they probably just didn't have umbrellas. But,
right.
I mean, even by opening kickoff, I mean, that place was darn near full. I think we registered, you know, just over 4,500 people for a home opener, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Obviously, would have been more if the weather would have cooperated.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's football weather, though, too, right?
I mean, you and I, and some people would just call us crazy, right? I mean, I didn't bring an umbrella, and I was standing out in the rain, right? So, I think we couldn't. I mean, we could have asked for better weather, but I think, you know, especially starting on a Thursday, you know, where there truly was, you know, a lot of eyes. I think we reached like 3,800 live stream viewers, unique
That's
live
awesome.
Stream views, which is fantastic in itself, right? So I think we could, I mean, you always could ask for better, but I think it was a week one success overall.
Yeah, that's awesome. We talk with head coach Rob Erickson in the second half of this podcast, right before he heads off on the road to Ohio to take on Kenyon College too. So,
which that'll be a great matchup.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, shout out our resident D3 football analyst Mike Schultz, who tweeted at us last week. So now I feel like I'm obligated to give a scouting report.
Yeah, where's my shout out? He gave you a shout out. I didn't get a shout out. I mean, come on now. Let's
it'll
go.
Be you know it'll be a good test. I truly think it was. They're coming off I'd say a hard loss last week at Bluffton. They were up at half and kind of completely switched the tides, and were held to 0 points in the second half. You know, kind of looking up and down their roster, they're kind of similar to us, where they have some youngsters slotted in and their starting quarterback's a true freshman. But I think I think the matchup matches up well for us in a sense of, I think, you know, if we can get our guys going early, their defense loves to blitz. I think we were watching it on Saturday, and I think within the first two drives, there was multiple times where there were 6-7 guys in the box, and they were just opening the gates of hell and blitzing all seven. Like, It'll be a test. Mm-hmm. It will. And even just talking with Rob, like it's an unfamiliar opponent, right? But that's why, you know, him and his coach, he has the coaching staff that he's assembled, and they've picked apart the film and kind of read it from that. But I think at the end of the day, if they just stick true to what they did, and, you know, I will say, like, I think we came away victorious on Thursday because we adjusted our game plan, and Rob kind of, you know, leans into it, mm-hmm. In the second half of the episode, you know, with the elements and stuff like that. I think it could go one of two ways. I think that's the way that you know, Blue Wolf football goes, you know, dual threat quarterback room, you know, mm-hmm. heavy on the run.
Yep.
But when that sun's shining, you know, who's to say the ball isn't, you know, getting tossed throughout the air.
Right.
Right. I mean, 363 total offensive yards is pretty good for a home opener, mm-hmm. especially with two sophomore quarterbacks and,
yep.
And credit to the line. I mean, Rob kind of mentions it, but, you know, he mentioned the starting five, but even, you know, some of the backups, guys like Ryan Kirk and Thor Sather, like, shout out to them. Like, they played great, like a cohesive unit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say we haven't had that in the past, but, like, this early on in a football season, it's very rare to mm-hmm. see. So,
right.
Again, we all know what's coming here in like 4 weeks with the WIAC schedule and how tough the conference is. But again, WIAC went 7-0, right? Like that's why people come here, because they want that competition. And
mm-hmm.
I think it starts with Saturday, going 1-0 on the week, and you know it might be a long drive down there, but I think we'll come out on top.
Awesome, I like it. Well, let's run through some of the other sports going on here too. We got volleyball. Right, volleyball coming up and such. So they're top 25 ranked volleyball team, right?
Yeah, we were down in Chicago last week. Mm-hmm. Played great, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, just played sound volleyball. I think the big one there is they held the University of Chicago, the hosts of the tournament, to a 0.24 hitting percentage, and Chicago's a ranked team. Like, that'll be a team that we could easily see in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
So, like, for the Blue Bulls to kind of come out and kind of shut down the defense and force them to make mistakes, I think was huge. We did give a setup to them. But, you know, at the end of the day, you come out of that tournament, the Colorado tournament, you're 6-1. We're recording this on a Wednesday. They're over in Minnesota this evening playing Bethel. And then we got the Sandy Schumacher tournament this weekend.
Yep.
So we kind of treat it like a home opener. The big one will be next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
For a true, you know, home opener feel with Whitewater coming to town, which kind of want to segue off that. September 19th, Friday, September 19th. I got to check the time on that game. 7 o'clock, hosting Whitewater. It will be Chippewa Valley night.
Yep.
So, did we talk about this last week?
We did, yep.
Well,
yep.
I'm going to keep just talking about it. Yep. So, very similar to what we did with the playoff basketball game last year.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets in for free. Right? Doesn't mm-hmm. matter if you're a Blue Gold student, staff member, community member. Everybody's getting in for free. We're doing a floor dedication for Lisa Herb and Claire Holman. We are going to hopefully pack that place. We're going to try to break the NCAA Division III record for attendance.
Nice. I like that goal. All
so
right.
We are mm-hmm. we are full steam ahead. Obviously, got games this weekend that we'll take care of, but if you have nothing going on, and I know it's a Friday with high school football and stuff like that, but hey, like, just come on down for you know, maybe a set or two, and and just kind of check it out, and
absolutely,
like, that atmosphere is gonna be fantastic.
That's awesome. We've got soccer. You want to talk a little soccer here for a minute or two? We got the men's team and women's team going on right now. So, want to start off with the men's?
Yeah, the men. Men set at 2-0-1. Game tonight in Augsburg. That should be a fairly good one. Actually, both the teams are in Augsburg tonight with a twin bill over at our Nelson Field. Right, I think that's what it's called. But played Sunday against a very good Edgewood team. Got down, trailed for about 40 minutes of the game.
Okay,
found a late equalizer. That was great. I mean, that team just there's no. There's never any question of the fight in that team. Like, they will fight till the final whistle. So, Obviously, not the result they wanted. Wins always look better than ties, but it's not as bad as a loss. And I think Edgewood is a tournament team. I mean, they were top 50 last year in the NPI. Like, that's not a bad draw whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, tonight, playing Augsburg. Augsburg's 5-0 right now, right? So you got two teams that are unbeaten, don't know what losing means yet this year. So
right.
it'll be a good test, mm-hmm. for them. On the women's side, kind of had a tough outing down Wheaton. They did, you know, secure the 1-1 draw against Wheaton College. Wheaton College is always, you know, pretty solid, especially in the CCIW.
Mm-hmm.
Did fall to RIT, which I don't know how you get a New York team in an Illinois tournament, but
yeah.
I'm not a college soccer coach, so I'm just gonna let that one be. But you know, there's still some things that they, you know, I think that they're still learning. It's a fairly young team in a sense of just trying to, you know, learn the systems and everything like that. So they also have Augsburg tonight, which will be a good test for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, before we know it, they hit WIAC play here very soon. So home opener for both those teams is this Saturday, the 13th. Women start at 2, men start at 7. Women have St. Ben's, the men have Elmhurst. So come on down, get your volleyball fix in on Friday, and then Saturday,
absolutely.
Come on out to Simpson, grab your
football
fix on the men's and women's side there.
Mm-hmm. Golf, I know we got the D3 Classic for the women's team this weekend. So
yes, very good showing from them this past weekend at their home invites, the Georgiani Invitational. Top three finish, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
Good to see both teams finishing in the top six. I think it's one of those things where, you know, being at home is great. Playing two different courses, I don't know how that, you know, kind of factors into it.
Right.
Because, I mean, not to say that you and I could be college golfers, but playing at Lake Wasota,
what do you mean?
You and I have played that course, so it's kind of cool to see, you know, Division III golfers playing at that course.
Yeah, absolutely.
See how they did. But shout out to Lily Kaminsky, finished tied for fourth overall on that tournament. But yes, the women then, you know, have the D3 Classic this weekend out at Emerald Greens, which I have played that course.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too bad.
Yeah.
And then on the men's side, I mean, they had a fantastic outing out at the Minnesota Golf Classic, finishing seventh overall, tons of D1 placement, or just D1 individuals. I mean, the guy who won it all was from Rutgers, the guy who placed second from South Carolina. So good competition there this past weekend. Shout out Spencer Lynch, tied for 12th overall over like 110 golfers.
Mm.
So they're kind of rocking with it. Big tournament this weekend. They're hosting their annual Wrigglesworth Invitational. I think we're up to like 130, 150 golfers.
Okay.
Out here at the country club. So that'll be a big event for the Blue Golds and some, you know, regional teams, you know, looking to place well against them. So that way, you know, towards the end of the season, it kind of reflects as they pick teams for,
right,
you know, the tournament. No NPI for that, so I can't crunch the numbers.
And then to wrap it up, we got tennis and obviously cross country going on too.
So. Cross country held their alumni meet over the weekend, so scores do count for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more just like an inner squad, to be honest with you, but you know, times do count for that,
right,
at the end of the year. So always good to kind of get some fresh competition out right away. They'll take the weekend off, and then I mean they jump right back into it next weekend on the 20th when they go to St. Olaf. So their season is off and rocking. Let's finish with women's tennis, because a huge shout out to one of the newer Blue Golds, Kyle Sayer, in collecting not only his first, but his second career win as a tennis coach.
Yeah.
So hats off to you, Kyle. But women's tennis kind of took care of business at home. A couple of 7-0 sweeps over River Falls and Stout, which obviously puts them in prime position for the WIAC Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Big one this weekend, though, as Whitewater comes to town. And, you know, it's kind of been years past. It's kind of been us, Whitewater, Lacrosse, kind of, you know, in the top three. I think Whitewater is the one with the target on their backs. in a sense of them taking home the championship for multiple seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So Saturday should be a good one. I got no doubt that the Blue Golds will be, you know, ready to rock. It's, mm-hmm. you know, can they overcome that challenge? Because Whitewater's deep this year. They yeah. really are. But like we say, any team can win on any given day.
Exactly. So. Exactly. All right, good stuff here. Let's take a quick break. A word from our fine sponsors and Coach Rob Erickson. Before he heads over to Ohio, he's going to join us as one of our three-time guests. Him and Jason are up there on the leaderboard. So
we got to start making T-shirts for recurring guests.
Probably. That's a good idea. Get somebody on it. Or a bumper sticker.
Robin.
All right, quick break. We'll be back after these words.
For the best hot sandwich in town, grab a grinder at Mancino's Grinders and Pizza, a family-owned Eau Claire favorite since 1997. Famous for oven-baked grinders on made-from-scratch bread, Mancino's also serves fresh pizzas, pastas, wings, and beer. Dine in, take out, or free delivery. Proud sponsor of Blue Gold Athletics and all local sports teams for nearly 30 years. Discounts available for visiting teams. Stop by, call, or visit Mancino'sEauClaire.com. Make Mancino's your family tradition.
Second half of this episode of the Rolling with the Golds. We're back, and I think this has got to be, Nick, you might know better than me, but our guest, the most appearances on the podcast, right? This is his third, I believe? Third? Yeah. Coach Erickson's?
Oh. Yeah.
So,
well,
a regular.
Well,
we don't count you. So.
Not me.
Jason?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Robin, maybe? Right, because the last two seasons we've ended with them, and then we've also done individual ones with them.
I think Robin's been twice.
Robin's twice, okay.
So maybe you or Jason up oh. there, so, yeah.
Up there with Top oh. Dog.
Yeah. The leaderboard is right up there, so. Didn't want to take away from your intro, Nick, but go ahead, introduce who our guest is, so.
Are we doing, do we do the pomp and circumstance for recurring guests?
Yeah, yeah. Go for it.
Well, yeah.
Especially, I mean, after a win. I mean, come on.
100%. Now, so. He's in year three. Mm-hmm. Got his third consecutive week one season opener win. Just atmosphere at Carson Park last Thursday was absolutely mm-hmm. fantastic. Even through all the rain and everything. This is a fun team to watch. And I think you and I had kind of hinted at that last week. Just watching the, like, for me, the emotions on the sidelines and even kind of watching back through film and stuff, like, and it's not even just the players, it's the coaching staff that he's assembled too. Like, these guys bleed blue and gold, and they are committed to the climb, they are committed to this program, and they all want to win. They're all winners, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was one of the pieces that I mean yes, taking the win against Carroll, who's a very good team, is good. But I think for me, like, you know, just seeing, I kind of laugh, but on the touchdown to Vince Hans in the left corner, like, seeing Coach Puck run halfway down the sideline, jumping up and down is fantastic, right? And especially for a kid who, you know, came in as a quarterback and it works hard and has been, you know, highly regarded by his teammates for how hard he's worked, even if he hasn't seen the reps, and you mm-hmm. know, us kind of finding him finding him a role within the offense. Like, I think the emotion was fantastic, and it was so refreshing to see
mm-hmm.
On Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of went off the rails for
no,
an intro,
no.
But welcome back to the Rolling with the Gold podcast, Coach Erickson.
I appreciate being here. I appreciate you guys asking, and wow, it's an honor. Third time,
yeah.
Wow, big elite company.
We got to keep this like a tradition now every year, right? At the beginning and such. So, well, first off, congrats on the big win last week. What was it like opening up on a Thursday night, too?
You know, it was actually really cool. It was, you know, something that we kind of went into it. Coach Bud and I, the head coach down at Carroll, talked about Thursday night. They did it a year ago when they went to Stout,
mm-hmm.
and he said the environment was really cool for kind of kicking off the Division III season on a Thursday. Most people start on a Saturday, obviously. And I would agree. I mean, moving forward, I would like to try to do more of that. I think mm-hmm. there's something to that excitement, and you stay away from a Friday, obviously, high school season. And
mm-hmm.
I thought the community would have, I mean, the community showed up, but the rain kind of hindered some of that a little bit. But, I mean, I know that would bring a lot of excitement and energy. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. Our kids enjoy it. And a lot of our kids, you know, are fairly young and they remember Friday Night Lights. And, man, coach, there's nothing better than being under the lights playing football. So it was fun. And, yeah, definitely going to try to continue to do it in the future.
Was there anything, like, from a preparation scheduling standpoint that presented any challenges? Or do you kind of look at, like, it's almost you get a couple of extra days rest afterwards because you do have a big trip coming up here in Ohio. Was there any differences in scheduling, like preparation for that?
Yeah, I mean, this whole non-conference season, you know, when we put it all together back in, you know, March, wherever it was, maybe even January, I wanted to be as strategic as possible, knowing that Thursday night I was okay then with taking the long trip to Kenyon. At that time we were talking and making contracts, and I'm like, boy, it'd be really hard to go to Kenyon if we were playing on a Saturday, but having that extra day to kind of rest and get a practice maybe earlier in the week really helped. So yeah, there was some strategy with all of that. And then I needed to have a home game week three because coming back from Kenyon, we weren't going to make another trip.
Right.
So, but the Thursday night did cause some, not issues, but it just made training camp different. You know, we started a little earlier than as a result, and then we did some night practices as, you know, the week leading up to it so our guys could see the ball under the lights and those types of things. So it changed kind of when we practiced time of day. And but, yeah, there was a lot that went into it. I think it was handled really well by the players. And you know, again, I would do it every year if we could.
So, I mean, you began the season, got some new faces in different positions too, right? New quarterback this year and such. Putting up some nice numbers in that first game too. So what were you most proud of with your team from that win last Thursday?
I'm super proud of our kids, of the confidence and competitive edge that they showed, you know, and it started right away. We really believed coming into January, February, starting the off season, that we had a potential to have a good football team. We have some great senior leaders who have played a lot of football for us, who we have 14 of them, but all 14 of them have a huge impact in the leadership and the role of our team. And we felt with their foundational kind of guidance and leadership with the younger guys that we were bringing in as freshmen and even the sophomores, we were in a good spot. But going into week one, you know, how does a sophomore who's never made a start before, and not just talking about Aiden, but other sophomores, you know, how is that moment going to feel? And what I'm most proud of is everybody who stepped on the field, you know, the moment wasn't too big. And they were exactly who we envisioned our players to be, which is calm and confident and physical. And so if we can continue to do that, which there's no indication to believe that we won't, I really like the makeup of this team and the competitive edge of the team.
Mentioned Aiden. I mean, obviously throwing up for over 200 yards, was your leading rusher in the game too. I mean, is that that's a high bar to set for week one, right? I mean, but it's got to get you excited too, potentially. I mean, you mentioned sophomore, and how many more years of this to come too?
Correct. Yeah, right. And it's a deep quarterback room of basically all sophomores, and well, Jacob is a junior. But those guys are really competitive, and they all bring their own edge. And Aiden, you know, did a great job of winning that job as the camp went on. And, yeah, he was our leading rusher. That's not what we would like, you know. But we did play three different running backs. We kind of had to change. You know, in the second half, it got to the point where it was raining, and we were like, we're going to have to run the football to close this game out. And they knew that, too. And so they started loading the box up. And so we had to get plus one quarterback run in there and do some things. And when Kendon came in, we had to kind of, you know, kind of feature him a little bit. But, you know, moving forward, we'd like our running backs, obviously, to carry most of the load and do that. But overall, we ran the ball efficiently, and, you know, we were able to get ourselves in manageable, you know, second down, third down calls. And but Aiden did a great job. You know, one thing we were a little nervous about early was, is it going to be too hard? You know, is the moment going to be too big for him, right? And we didn't feel that way, but he's a sophomore. We didn't want to put too much on his plate. So we relied heavily on our O-line and our tight ends and the running game. And then as we could see that he was settling in pretty quickly, that's when we started taking our shots and doing some of those things. And, yeah, he was ready for it and, you know, proud of the kid. And now he's got to do it again week two.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, speaking about that confidence, I mean, you guys get that interception. And the first play right after, it's a 69, you know, yard touchdown pass. Like, to have that confidence, not only, you know, from you, but from you know, Coach Dunn to, you know, draw something like that up with a sophomore quarterback who, you know, hasn't seen as much time, like, is that just kind of like the exception, the expectation for, you know, guys coming in and filling these roles of like, hey, like, the moment may be big, it might be small, but we trust you no matter what? Or is it kind of just, you know, kind of feeling off what they're doing?
Yeah. No, I mean, moving forward now, I mean, everybody that got an opportunity to play has got has always had our trust, but now it's like, okay, now you're not a sophomore. Mm-hmm. Now you're playing football. Now you're a college football player. Go out there and do your job. So age doesn't matter. We got game one under our belt. Now when your number is called, perform at the level we expect. And, you know, and I think by the time we got to that point in the game, it was the right call. Coach Dunn kind of had that one in his pocket, ready to go for a big moment. And Gianni set the stage with the big pick, got the energy going. And it just worked out great. And we got him into a – I think they miscommunicated a little bit on their coverage. They wanted to be into cover two over there. And I think the safety got maybe a little bit too tight on the hash. Either way, Yach got open, put a beautiful ball on him, and, you know, it worked out really well. But that's yeah, now moving forward, hey, no matter how old you are, like, let's go play football and mm-hmm. do your job.
Well, and you and I were even just talking about it, you know, in the lobby. And I've talked to, you know, I think we talked about it last week. And I've talked to many people about it, like, we keep, you know, saying sophomores. It's because this team, you know, is pretty deep with, you know, second-year individuals. But the amount of reps that some of these guys got, you know, guys like Jimmy McGovern, Brady Poles, like, even their first year, like, they're borderline juniors at this point, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's how I would see it as well. I mean, last year's team, you know, we were senior-laden. You know, we had a lot of seniors that graduated. I mean, there was a moment where I put the film on in the offseason, just getting ready for the season, and I'm like, boy, every guy that's on the field right there, there's only two of them that are going to be coming back yeah. that have played. So there was some question marks on offense, but with the guys that we knew coming in, we're like, okay, we're going to be all right. Defensively last year, we took some lumps, and there were stretches where we weren't very good because the guys were playing that probably weren't ready as freshmen, physically weren't ready. The game of speed was a little faster, but then they started to kind of settle in as the year went on, and now those guys, they act like juniors, they act like seniors, they play with a confidence level of an upperclassman, and even though they're sophomores, yeah, we're expecting to really rely on our defense to carry us all year long. And yeah, they're young, but they're not really, and that's the cool part.
I want to talk, speaking of youth in it too, and you mentioned the running backs. I mean, it's, again, sophomores and freshmen. Paxton, shout out Medford, by the way, representing right. Medford right there. But I mean, you look at, everybody had multiple carries in there too. Is that kind of the envision or vision you kind of see with that running back room, or is it going to be like a hot hands, you know, kind of thing situation? Tell us a little bit about the running back depth.
Yeah, the running back depth is, you know, something that, you know, they're all kind of new guys that didn't carry the ball last year.
Mm-hmm.
But as we went out and attacked the offseason and recruiting and looking for the transfer portals of guys that can make some immediate impacts, you know, Connor Paxton came from us, and, you know, from Toledo, and he's a big back. And yeah. we knew that about him. And we've been, for 2 years leading up to this year, we were trying to find that feature downhill, you know, guy who's going to be physical, right? Mm-hmm. And we've always had good shifty zone running type backs, but it's been more of that guy. So he filled that role. And then, you know, Nick Scott came to us, and he's a burner that can get to the edge, and he's still, you know, figuring out his run keys inside on mid zone and inside zone. But when he gets it all together, he's got an electric, you know, speed that we definitely like. And I would say Nakai and Paxton are just, you know, they're the guys that throughout camp have been the most consistent in their assignments. They're very athletic. They can continue to move the pile forward. And so, yeah, we went into week one saying, hey, let's try to find a role for all four of these guys, get each one a drive and a series, and, you know, just continue to compete and see how it goes. I don't know if we'll go all year with four guys in rotation, but early on we wanted to see, since nobody really had game reps under their belts, you know, who can really play.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to carry that again into this weekend, you know, and just keep going and seeing maybe who establishes themselves as the number one running back. But I think they all do a great job in their own way, and, you know, maybe we play all four of them all year. I don't know. I think they're all valid. They all have they should all be able to have the opportunity to play. They're all good enough to play, and I'm excited about that depth. And you know, the good thing about running back is, you know, unfortunately it's a physical position, so you get kind of banged up. So guys might miss a week or two with an ankle or a shoulder, and you want to be able to put somebody in there that's got experience, and we're definitely going to have that ability to do that.
Let's talk a little bit in the trenches. You know, your offensive line's got a nice mixture, a couple seniors, a couple of youngsters in there too, and I know you guys really pride yourself on finding those big guys up there, both on the offensive and defensive side. How do you like the makeup of your big guys in the trenches?
Yeah, I'm proud of our offensive line and the transition they've made from January to now.
Mm-hmm.
We've changed our style and some of our run concepts a little bit to feature the room that we think we have and the room that we're going to have moving forward. It's a really athletic group. You know, I Ben Helene and Gunnar Hurlbert, our two tackles, have a lot of game experience. They are the seniors in the group.
Mm-hmm.
When they're around the huddle, you can just sense a calm presence to them. And they kind of, when guys get a little bit fired up or whatever, they just kind of keep it all even keel. And they do a great job. And to be really successful on offense, I really believe you have to have good tackles. And those two are some of the best in the league. And we're blessed to have both of them. And, You know, so then building from the inside, you know, our center position's got to be an athletic kid that can get to the second level, to the linebackers, and block in space and have quick feet. And Peyton Jacks is kind of been that guy we've felt like for a year or so that could eventually take that over, and he did. He came in and he's doing a great job. He's got a physical presence. Even though he's not 300 pounds, he's big enough, and you know, he's really good. Mm-hmm. And then we have you know, Ryan Sussner and Andrew Preisel are our other two guards, and we've went to more of a mid-zone type of concept, which gets guys moving laterally a little bit, and they're really athletic. And we haven't had that athleticism at the guard position in years past. We've had more guys that are bigger and could do more inside zone power blocking, but for what we're trying to do and what we're trying to see in the offense kind of evolve to, I think our offensive line fits that mold really well. And as we continue to recruit, we're going to recruit guys that fit more of the style that we're presenting this year and moving forward. So I really like them. They're really gelling as a group. Their double team combinations are as clean as they've ever been. And, you know, I'm excited to see these guys continue to grow and get better, you know, over the next 9 to 12 months or mm-hmm. weeks or whatever it is, and playing good football.
Flip it to the other side. Defensively, you got a few sacks in that game. You guys mentioned already the, you know, the pick and such. I mean, how do you like the makeup of those guys on that side of the ball?
Yeah, well, go ahead.
I just want to add to that, the amount of fumbles that you guys had that went out of bounds that don't get recovered, so they don't show up mm-hmm. in the stat sheet. But,
right.
like, you guys could have had probably half a dozen fumbles.
Yeah, so like the four that we knocked out were all within 3 yards of the sidelines. They all went out of bounds. Like, gosh, you got to get those on the hash mark somewhere. But no, it's a conscious effort. I mean, Coach Graveld and our defensive staff do a great job every practice of making punching the ball out a priority. And we have periods in practice where they get the green light to go and hit our offensive guys that way. And so it's got to become muscle memory. It's got to be something that just you don't even think about when you're approaching the ball carrier, that, hey, the window's there, I'm going to take it. And the guys did a really good job. So I'm proud of our defensive guys for doing that. But going back to, like, the defensive side of the ball, I mean, our defensive line, a lot of the guys that are playing right now have played in previous years, last year. Super confident, deep room. You know, we're a 4-3 base. You got to have 4 D tackles that are big and athletic, and we have those guys and even more. Our depth has grown. And then our edge pieces are very dynamic, you know, both Brady and Jimmy and Carson and guys that have been proven to rush the passer, which is a huge part of that position.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been great having Gianni back. I mean, Gianni's got a presence in that room that he's had for 2 years, and now he's playing again, and he's feeling confident. He's a captain leader. We've moved Brady Hoffner inside, even though he was an all-conference player as an outside linebacker. His physical presence and leadership and just knowledge of the defense gives us that middle linebacker that we need. And then Keegan Christie is a transfer. He's an older kid. He's only a sophomore, but he's a third-year sophomore that you know, again, that linebacker room got pretty old, is the oldest room in the defensive side. And, you know, I thought they played really well. You know, they mm-hmm. communicate well. And then we have a nice blend of guys who all played. I mean, we played 7 guys in the game, and they all deserve their own reps. The back end is kind of the new part. The back end, we don't really know. We didn't really know. I mean, you know, Nate Majewski and Deshaun Sager were kind of two guys that played for us in the past. Everybody else kind of transferred or is coming up through the scout team. And, well, I thought they were really good. You know, last 2 years, there's been moments where we've blown communication and given up explosive plays, but they kept everything in front. Communication was on point this last weekend. You can tell a confidence level in that group. So we're going to rely heavily on our defense all year. We're going to expect them to play really well and be able to control the clock offensively and make games close throughout the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm. So kind of like you just mentioned it, right? Like the amount of transfers that we picked up in the offseason, but even, you know, the first year guys. And like, it's kind of cliche to say, like, you know, do you only recruit people that fit your system or fit your culture? But it kind of just feels like, and yet it's year 3, right? So we're making positive progression every year, but it seems like this year, like, even, you know, coming down to camp and talking with guys, like, everybody is so bought in even before, you know, opening kickoff. Like, is that something you look for when, you know, going through the transfer portal or bringing in recruits? Of like, I know you guys preach it, but is it one of those things where if you kind of tell a kid's not gonna, you know, necessarily gel with, you know, what the culture is it something where you kind of just like, you know what, you know, we're gonna go a different direction? Or is it truly just, you know, kids show up and it's you're either in or you're out?
Yeah, no, that's a great, that's the whole philosophical coaching philosophy that I have, and I think all coaches have, right, is you got to set a standard. And a majority of the kids that we're going to have on our team every year are going to be kids that from high school, were recruited out of high school to come to Eau Claire in a vision and a belief that we have for football. And, you know, we're very transparent, and it's about a 6-7 month process to recruit a kid to Eau Claire. And during that time, a ton of conversations have. And then we got to follow through with what we said, right? And so when a kid says, yes, I want to come to Eau Claire, they're signing up for the university and the academic programs and the city and everything that is outside of football, but they're also signing up for what we have kind of painted a picture of what football is going to look like. And as long as we back that end up, the kids are like, hey, I'm all in because that's what I signed up for. It's what I want. And I think that's why our locker room is so strong, is because, you know, we have almost, well, it's over 2/3 of our team are kids that were actively recruited by our staff. And so they know what we want. They know what our expectations are. And then they control the locker room. And the seniors that have stayed, which are 14 of them, they were here as freshmen. And now they're going, yeah, I'm all in on this. And so they help it. So then when you start looking about transfers, you know, what is the goal of the transfer? That is one of the first questions I ask. What do you want out of this change? Are you looking just to play? Because if you're looking to just play, I don't know if this is going to be the right spot. You know, you're going to have to earn everything. It's going to have to be an opportunity where you come in and show that you can do what you need to do. You know, and so what do you want out of it? Is it a one-year deal? Is it, hey, I'm a sophomore or freshman. I have 3 years to go. The place I was at just wasn't what I thought I signed up for, but you guys recruited me actively, and now I'm coming here a second time. There's a lot of stories that go into it, but there was plenty of kids that wanted to transfer in the offseason, to your point, Nick, that we just felt like after getting to know them and getting them on campus and spending time with them, were not going to fit with what we wanted. Mm-hmm. They were selfish. They just weren't going to fit. And so we just said, hey, man, I wish you the best of luck, but this isn't going to work out. The guys that we brought in, you know, was not just a one-time call, be on campus one day and see what it was like. I mean, they had to pass a lot of what we look for in recruits, and they did. And, you know, Larry Bowe is another guy. I mean, when you talk to Larry, I mean, he is about as bought in as a teammate as you can get. And we have a lot of those guys. And so, yes, it is definitely, when you're bringing somebody new into the family, do they fit the role of the family? And that's freshmen, too. If they don't fit the role of the family, then we got to move on to another guy. You know, and one guy can crush a culture, and you got to make sure you everyone you bring in you feel like is the right fit. So,
looking ahead to your game this weekend against Kenyon College, a little bit of a long road trip and such. Is this something that you guys? I mean, is this the longest road trip you've had since
being here?
So, how do you prepare for something like that? Like, what extra preparation goes into it, especially with an uncommon opponent over there too?
Yeah, It's really just, you know, getting the logistics of the travel and trying to break it up on the way there. That's been the number one goal. So we're going to leave tomorrow. Tomorrow's Thursday. We're going to, you know, right now our kids are usually get out of class around 2:00 because we start meetings in the process there. So I want the kids to have a normal school day all day Thursday. Then we'll jump on a bus. We're going to get down to Janesville, and we're going to do a walkthrough and have some dinner down there. But, you know, trying to break it up so they're not on the bus for a long time.
Right.
But then at some point after the game on Saturday, we just got to hit it and get back here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll make some frequent stops, go to the bathroom and just kind of stretch our legs. But, you know, we're going to just make that one as fast back as we can, you know, to get ready for our next game. But on the way there, I want to make sure our guys don't cramp and get lethargic and get sore. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're taking good care of them on the way. So that takes a lot of planning and a lot of stops. And It's a challenge, but it's a challenge I like. I'm a planner. I like to kind of think things through, and, you know, it gives me a sense of, hey, this is going to work out all right. But yeah, it's definitely different. I mean, we're normally our Thursday routine and our Friday routine are pretty consistent every week, and that's all got thrown out the window. You know, now we're practicing at a different site for a shorter time. Friday's practice is different. We're actually going to the Coach Freeze over at Ohio Northern was very gracious to let us use his facility for a couple hours.
Oh, so nice.
On the way out there, we're going to stop at Ohio Northern and practice and
That's
actually
awesome.
Have lunch on their campus and just kind of let the kids kind of have 3 hours just to kind of get into football mode. So,
right.
You know, just finding those little things that can help and break up the trip so our guys, you know, are feeling fresh on Saturday. That's what it's all about.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So not to look too far ahead because I know your game-by-game, you know, approach, but the conference overall has got high expectations,
right.
I would say, this year. It's the best conference in Division III football, right?
Yeah.
Especially everybody won week one.
Yeah, well,
there's
good point.
There's a couple of tough ones there, but everybody, Wyack is 8-0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's is that something obviously you guys embrace, right? I mean, that's kind of a calling card, right? Hey, we're in the toughest. We know we got to bring our A game every single week. Is that something when you use these non-conference games, you kind of prepare for that conference schedule? Or what's that mindset when you kind of get to conference play?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the biggest thing for me is to find a Division III opponent. Mm-hmm. You know, as you look at the postseason, now with the rankings the way they are, you know, playing a Division II team, playing an NAI team doesn't really help you personally as an institution, but then the conference in general. And so for us, the biggest thing is find Division III opponents. Mm-hmm. And that's a challenge in itself because not a lot of conferences have three bye weeks. A lot of them now only have two bye weeks. So finding that third game is a challenge. So I'm trying to find any team that's willing to play us within our region so we don't have to fly if we don't have to. But that's going to be something that I know we're going to have to go down that path at some point potentially and do a flight game like Oshkosh had to do to go to Linfield this weekend out in Oregon. We're trying to find the best games we can because we know at the end of the day those three games are really, really important. They're going to be a challenge, but the challenge is the league, as you alluded to. I think we have five teams in the top 25 right now. And so I don't care who you play non-con. It's going to be probably not as deep as what we go through. So I'm just trying to find local games that are Division III and starting there. And, you know, we're blessed to have the metropolitan area of Minnesota where the MIAC is out of, where there's plenty of teams there. There's still a league in Wisconsin like Carroll and the Midwest League and then the CCIW and the Iowa League. Like, we're around some Division III programs. It's just a matter of, does the schedule fit? Do they have an open date and all those things? So that's how I try to put it together. But, yeah, they use the non-conference to learn about your team because, really, you got to win the league. You got to finish in the top two in the league to give yourself a chance at the second season in the postseason. So, do some things that maybe you wouldn't do in a conference game. Develop your depth. See who can perform, you know, more in the non-con.
Well, kind of just expand on that. I mean, you're 100% right. You play a D2 or an NAIA school. With NPI now, it does that game just doesn't factor in, you know, at all. So I'll correct myself. The WIAC went 7-0 last week, because you see a team with Coach Janice and lacrosse, they're only playing 9 games, right? So do you what is your take on that? You know, they started a week later, one less game. From my standpoint, I would just assume, right, you don't want to play that D2 or NAIA school because it's, you know, in a sense, you know, for NPI, meaningless, and, you know, you want to avoid injuries, but, like, what is your take on, you know, playing, you know, only two non-con versus the three?
I think it's an obligation of us as football coaches to give the kids 10 games, no matter what that looks like. I'll always believe that. Training for football is such a grind when you hit January through July, and it's all you do every day, and you only get 10 promised opportunities. I mean, that's a small... It's just one of those weird sports where it's not like you're playing 30, 40 sport games. You're playing 10. And to take one away because you're trying to worry about rankings and stuff, that to me doesn't validate it. And I know Coach Janice wanted to play. I know, and I won't call out schools, but I'm talking to him in the offseason. He reached out to multiple Division II schools who didn't want to play him. And so he wasn't able to play. He would have played a Division II game. I know he would have if he would have got an opponent to jump in.
Well, it's probably because of how well they did against Grand Valley last year.
Correct. And all of us, right? I mean, I think our league in general has a winning record versus D2 schools over the last 10 years. So it's a very high risk for a D2 school to come and lose and potentially to one of us. And I know we're such a confident and strong league that we're like, we'll play anyone at any place, anywhere, and we just want a game, right? I know he wanted a 10th game. It didn't work out. But I'm in the same boat. Like, I want 10 games. I'll play a Division I non-scholarship. I'll play a Division II school if we need to, or an NAI school. We're going to give our kids 10 games. We owe them that, and that's just my philosophy. Mm-hmm.
So entering year three for you, what's the goal? You know, personally, team-wise, I'm sure everybody's probably asking you that at this point, but what is the goal?
Our goal, like, we define success as when you graduate. Did you think your experience at Eau Claire was the best experience of your life? Mm-hmm. If that is a yes, then it was a success. And football definitely plays a huge part in that, but it's also the dining experience and the academic experience and all the things that come with being a student. So that's how we define that. So to me, that is the ultimate goal, is that every kid that comes into our program walks away with a successful experience. on the field competitively, obviously it's time to take that next step, you know, on the win-loss column and continue to push and be better than where we were these last 2 years on the stat sheet. And so, you know, we're a process-oriented program, but at the end of the day, people want to win. Like, I'm competitive, our staff is competitive, and the kids that we have in the room all expect and want to win. And so we got to play good, clean football and give ourselves that opportunity. And I want to see us have better results this year. I want to see our record move in the right direction. I don't want to be that lovable loser that's 2-8 and everybody likes. Like, nobody likes that. That's like a backhanded compliment, right? Like, you want to be able to say, we got this thing going in the right direction. And, you know, I don't know what the record is this year. I don't have a benchmark. Like, we got to get the X amount of wins. But I want to see our team be extremely competitive in every game. I'm challenging myself and the coaches that, you know, when games are close in the fourth quarter, you know, like we had against Coe and Bethel a year ago, we found a way to lose those games, unfortunately, you know, and I take full responsibility for that. Like, we didn't call the right plays at times. We didn't manage situations well at times. And we're going to fix that. And as we spent the entire offseason, one main focus was, when games are close, which we've closed the gap talent wise, when games are close in the fourth quarter, now it's on us as coaches and the players to execute and win games in the fourth quarter. You know, I've had plenty of mentor coaches that I have a ton of respect for tell me, when you take over a program that hasn't had a lot of success, the first year you just got to survive. The second year you're going to lose close games. That third year you got to win those close games. And then once you get to that point, then you start building that confidence in the character of the team. And then it just kind of starts to kind of continue to stack and build and climb from there. So year three is, if we get in close games, we got to win. Right? And we got to find a way to out-execute our opponent and play clean football and not turn the ball over. And that's one of the proudest things we did this last weekend. In the rain, we had zero turnovers. You know, and we only had two penalties. And I would say both of them, I thought, were judgment calls that weren't very clear. And but either way, two penalties, no turnovers, that's a pretty clean game. If we can keep playing like that, we're going to give ourselves a chance.
Especially for the first game of the season, too, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's like unheard of.
Right. You know, watch college football across the country, great teams are still fumbling the football because it's the first time they're getting hit. They're throwing interceptions. And for us to be that clean, you know, gives us a lot of excitement and hope.
So you mentioned the climb in there, too, with that. I mean, that's still the mindset, right? Is that climb. So.
Yeah, and I don't see that changing. I mean, who knows? 20 years when I'm 70 years old and maybe I want to change something. But, I mean, that's just kind of who we are, and the kids understand it and they believe in it. And it's a process, and it will always be a process-oriented program.
So I want to ask you, because of your offensive lineman camp that you have every year, I mean, that seems to be a huge draw. It's very popular and such. I mean, how beneficial is that for your program to hold something like that every single year?
Yeah, I mean, to Coach Lang, Coach McHugh, and our entire staff, you know, one vision we had coming in is that, you know, we want to pride ourselves on running the football and stopping the run, right? In order to do that, you need to have some big athletic linemen, right? And so how can we get the best of the best in the Midwest on our campus every year, even if they decide to go Division One or Division Two and take scholarship money? How can we at least show them what we have, which is – the Sonntag is the best facility in the country. So we just put all our focus on that one camp and tried to get kids to come to our camp months in advance. And the first year, it was a huge success. And kids were like, man, this is not only a really great facility, but how you run the camp is as good as anybody in the country at any level in terms of the organization of it, the reps, the amount of exposure these kids get. We bring in scholarship coaches from across the country, and they're taking notes. And so kids are like, man, I'm not only getting recruited and seen by Eau Claire, but Wisconsin and Minnesota and all the D2s and the FCS level schools are all here. I'll come for one day and show my talents. And so it's blown up. It's been huge. And I think it's so many camps now are prospect camps, meaning that you just run around a 40-yard dash, you do a couple pro agilities, you do a broad jump, and very little of it is, are you a good football player? Like, show me blocking somebody. So we call it, like, you know, football, like, underwear Olympics, really. Like, you're just out there in spandex and running around showing how good of an athlete you are.
Like pro days, right?
Pro days. That's what they are. And we're like, no. We're going to find out who's the lineman. Right? We're going to put the pads on. We're going to run a couple concepts. We're going to see if you can move people off the point of attack. We're going to see if you can use your hands on defense and shed blocks. Like, that's what people want to see. And so I think we are the premier lineman camp, because we've changed the narrative on how, you know, you're going to get recruited. And so now it's going into year three this next year. we've already got huge numbers wanting to come. Like, we're looking at, do we have to have two different waves?
Oh, wow.
And a lot of them are scholarship-level kids. 47% of the kids that were at our camp got scholarships last year.
Wow.
So you're talking about kids that are usually won't go to a Division III camp, mm-hmm. are walking around. So it's right. a huge camp. Yeah, to your point, I'm glad you brought it up because it's been a huge thing for us. And I do think that's why our depth on those, both of those sides of the ball on the lines have really helped.
Absolutely. So before we let you go here, I want to get your – so what's a typical week like look like for you, like preparation week? I know this one's a little different, yeah. obviously, but, you know, because what a normal week, let's say, like Correct. A game on Saturday.
Yeah, so, wow, that's a great question. Because people ask, well, how many hours do you work? And I'm like, boy, I don't know. It's a lot, but I don't count them. But, like, Sunday, for example, I give the guys off, the coaches off, and the team is off on Sunday. So we play on Saturday. Sunday, the team is off. But the coaching staff, I have them, we meet at noon, go to church, do what you want to do in the morning. And then we'll operate, we'll put that, the game we just watched or played, we'll watch that for about 3 to 4 hours. So somewhere around 3 to 4 o'clock, we'll be done with that. All our notes, all our grade sheets are done. And then we dive right into the next opponent. And, we start watching those games. And that takes us to about 10, 11 o'clock at night on a Sunday. And then we have our first staff meeting at 8 a.m. on Monday. And we just kind of talk about what we saw and where we're at and the schedule for the week. Because then I lay out the schedule for the week to all the coaches, what the practice plans are Monday through Friday, so they can start kind of planning ahead how many periods they get and how many reps they should be able to count for. And then at 3 o'clock, we bring the team in and we meet. So from 8 to 3, we're just kind of continuously building our plan for the next opponent. Then we go from 3 to 6 o'clock with the team. Half of that is putting the old game to rest and then starting the next prep for the next team. And then we come back after that at 6:30, and we go to about 10, 11 o'clock and continue to plan for the team we're playing. Tuesday, same as Monday. Basically start at 8 with meetings, go all the way up to 3 o'clock, meetings, practice, come back Tuesday night and get ready for our goal line red zone 2-minute stuff. Because mm-hmm. each time we get together, we're talking about a segment of the game. You know, so Sunday, Monday, the first part is really first and second down, which is 62% of the game. What is our base plays that we're going to run 2/3 at a time? But then Monday night, what's our third down plan? Third medium, third and short. How are we going to attack them? How on both sides of the ball? And then Tuesday comes, we start looking at fourth down, goal line, red zone, backed up, all the specialty situations. So that by the time Wednesday's done, we're kind of done. So Monday is a 1-hour practice. Tuesday's a 2-hour practice. Wednesday's a 2-hour practice. And we call it a ramp up. On Monday, we just do no shoulder pads. It's more just kind of jog through tempo. Tuesday's shoulder pads, physical. Wednesday's full pads. And we do a scout bowl on Wednesday night. It's our culture. We call it the Blue Gold Bowl, where it's 20 plays, and the kids that are on scout team get to go and tackle because they don't get to play in games on Saturday. And it's really, really fun. It's kind of a culture builder. And then Thursday's a walkthrough. We really ramp it back down on Thursday. We don't even put the pads on. We just wear street clothes, and we do a walkthrough for an hour. Then we have what we call Fast Friday, which is a 1-hour practice running everything that's been in the game plan. By Friday, our coaches have trimmed fat out of the game plan because, like, we like this concept on Monday, ran it a couple times Tuesday, Wednesday. It doesn't really look good. Let's get rid of that. So we have our final game plan Friday, and then, you know, Saturday we play a game. So Typically Thursday we're out of the office. I try to get the coaches out. Well, the coaches are out of the office after practice, which is about 6 o'clock. And then Friday we're off the field at 4:30. But then we go to high school games, and mm-hmm. so then we go and recruit and go watch kids play, and then Saturday we're back in, ready to go for the game.
Man, is your wife still a volunteer coach too at times? Or?
She comes by. that's the only time we get a chance to see her. So, yeah, she is, and all the other wives too. I mean, I know it's a struggle for all the families and the wives and girlfriends, you know, so they come over to the facility a lot. You know, mm-hmm. it's Sunday night. You know, it's not uncommon for all the wives and girlfriends of our defensive staff, they bring in food. You know, they all kind of get together and they'll bring in lasagna and pasta, and mm-hmm. that way they get a chance to see their husband for a couple hours on a Sunday. So,
well, it's another family for you guys, right?
Correct.
It's everybody. I mean, the team and everything like that. So that's really cool. You have anything else before we let Coach go and get ready for week two?
Nah, he's got a long bus ride coming up.
Yeah.
Hydrate, right?
Expense reports. I got to finish up on the bus ride.
Well, Coach, thank you so much for stopping by and hanging out with us. Best of luck for this season, and I can't wait to follow this team throughout the season, too. So, nice job week one, and looking forward to the rest of the season.
Awesome. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me on.
You got it.
You bet.